Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, December 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. As we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me once again here for our Tuesday meeting show. We've got two professional handicappers that join us every Tuesday. Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com and also Sports Cheetah, our Hunting for Winners segment with him from WagerTalk.com. So a lot of stuff to go over here this week. Of course, bowl games beginning on Saturday. Lots of those to talk about. Also, we'll chat some NFL, see if we get some college basketball in there as well. We'll go ahead and bring in both of our guests today because we are recording in Las Vegas. My last night in town, get a chance to meet up with these two fine gentlemen here. Brian, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Thank you for going out. I appreciate you buying our dinner afterwards, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, I have to, right? You guys are hooking me up here with the live show. It's pretty outstanding.
Well, I wasn't really expecting that, but this is great.
Brian just swiped $20 from Adam for that comment.
I just decided we're going to a more expensive restaurant.
Yeah, where are we going now? How's your weekend been, Adam?
That's good, man. Good? It's always nice.
Vegas treating you well.
Yeah, for sure. Cheetah, how's everything going with you?
Things are good. Yeah, Lamar Jackson cashed. I can breathe again. looking forward to the bowl season.
You mean that free money that you were sweating?
Yeah, it was pretty free. It was something I had to do. So,
you ever think that opportunity is going to come up again? I mean, you know, that prop swap thing, it is new. We'll see. You talked about it last week. You're not really sure how much traction it's going to get just because of, you know, the nature of it and all that. But, I mean, you feel like you'll ever get that opportunity again?
I think it is growing. One thing they told me when I just was actually meeting with them earlier today, they said they have me now on speed dial. They want to text me whenever, because I guess what they're doing now is at nights, especially like a Monday night football game or a Sunday, they're at like some books and talking with people that have tickets, especially if they're like the last leg of a, you know, a 16 parlay or teaser, and they can try to sell it and work out a deal. You know, so I know there was one tonight they were trying to get me to buy. It was like $2,000 ticket on to get the Pats plus 110 minus six versus minus 110. You know, that was like the second leg of a two-team parlay that someone had, and I didn't end up needing it. I have no feel about this game tonight. But I think there are going to be more opportunities kind of in those in-game moments, not necessarily in-game specifically or literally, but just, you know, in those days when the night games roll up Sunday and Monday night, if I'm on their speed dial, then maybe I'll have some spots where I can buy.
Yeah, I spoke to them a few times. They've been around actually a couple of years now. This is actually where they're getting all the promotion from. But the problem that they had originally was everything was so small. $20 here, $40 here, and they were based out of a local bar. You just go there and make the decisions with them. But who is going to drive halfway across the city just for a $20 or $40 ticket? I think they were trying to get into it more for the general public and just the guys sitting in the bar, that kind of thing. But if they do get more into this, there'll be a lot of people that will be interested in it. But the problem is there enough people out there that are betting these big numbers or getting such a great deal? I mean, it's 100-1.
Yeah.
So nobody expected him to win, at least at that point. So it was a rare occurrence. We'll see. If we can get more of this, it'd be a great deal.
Well, and I think it's really interesting, too, because it's a new dynamic in the industry. And I mean, we see entity wagering. We see, derivatives are huge now, all the live betting that's going on. I mean, the industry's really progressing in a big way. And I think that's something that's really cool here about the Tuesday show is we've got an old school guy in Brian. You know who?
I'm just an old guy.
It's nice. You're going to be cheap for dinner because you can order off the senior menu. but when it comes to Cheetah, you know, a newer guy here in the industry, a little bit different. You know, into some more of the advanced statistics, the analytics, and it's nice to see the way that Brian has adapted. You know, to all the changes that have gone on out here, and then of course, you know, for you and I mean, this is what we've grown up in the industry with.
Yeah, no, it definitely is good to see the two sides, I guess, mesh. And it definitely can be positive for everyone. I mean, Twitter is such an awful place sometimes.
Yeah.
Really, we're all trying to help each other win money, and that's the goal. And, yeah, definitely things like this are going to be helpful.
Well, of course, I think, too, Cheetah, that, you know, when we talk about the prop swap thing, I mean, we discussed it, last week, over the last 2 weeks, really, with the college basketball futures that you like to play. Yeah. And it could certainly come in handy with that, with the way that those numbers move. You know, like, let's say, you got Butler in Indiana this weekend. You know, I think Purdue plays Notre Dame as well.
Yep.
You got some big games that could shift the prices in the futures market, and that's where that prop swap can come into play.
Yeah, like I have like a UCLA at 75-1 that I think they're like 6-1 now. And I just took it 12 days ago, you know, before the Kentucky win. That's how drastic the market moves can be. And obviously taking UCLA now is horrible. When I recommended it, I think on the show, it was still 50 or so. But, you know, there's such fluctuation in those futures markets, especially for college basketball. So there's going to be a spot for that for sure.
I take it that Duke didn't go wild after they crushed UNLV by 45. That
I took the points of that game, so that shows you how much I know about that. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some of this college football stuff here because we've got five games coming up this weekend. We've got a lot of bowl games, a lot of different teams, a lot of lesser-known teams here, and those are always the really interesting bowl games for me because you get the semifinals with Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and Washington. You know, we got Florida State plays Michigan. You know, there are some really big matchups out there, but a lot of times these are the more interesting handicaps when you have these teams that, you know, maybe don't get to go to a bowl game very often, or, you know, there's a lot of turnover in these conferences because there's no big front runner team that recruits year after year after year. So let's start with this New Mexico Bowl here between UTSA and New Mexico, who gets to play at home here in this one. New Mexico laying 6.5, 7, 7.5s out there as well, depending on where you look. I guess the first question to ask here, Brian, I'll pose this to you. We talk about motivation in the bowl season. We talk about sometimes these teams get to go to destinations to play their bowl games. For New Mexico, they're playing at home. Is there anything special about this game for them that would change, you know, the way that they're going to approach it?
Yeah, that's something you have to look at all the games. Hawaii's in a bowl, and, of course, they're playing at home. I just think it's the extra practice. I think it definitely obviously helps them for next year to be able to have that bowl regardless of where they play because they get the extra practices in. But, yeah, that's something you have to weigh on each and every one. You know, I take a look at this guy. I made the line 9. I think the line's a little bit cheap here for New Mexico. I prefer that side. You have to look at each game individually. And, you know, UTSA is going to be excited to be here. So at least on that side, you're going to get it. But New Mexico, I think they were pretty much figuring they were going to go to this bowl all along. So unless you know something that I don't.
I don't. My number is 5 if they weren't playing in New Mexico with them. I mean, generally that would be 8 for me. You're 9. It's curious for me how much do you really give home field to in this particular spot. And I think Brian really nailed it just at the end. And I think I mentioned this on the show last week or the week prior. In general, for a lot of these teams playing, I think Central Florida is another one, North Texas maybe. None of those teams really had lofty goals in the first place. So the fact that they're playing in a bowl game for them – I think is great. I don't think they're really upset that they're not traveling to some cool destination to play a bowl. So in this case, New Mexico playing at home, I definitely don't think it's a disadvantage. So a number, you know, under 7, I think does actually have a little bit of value. So I'd bet New Mexico or pass.
Yeah, I think New Mexico's got a big advantage on the Lions. I do my sack analysis, and New Mexico, you know, is a team. They lost the sack number against Colorado State by 1, but other than that, they've 6 out of the last 7 games. They've won the sack advantage. And then you like take a UTSA. Once all season, they won the sack advantage. And that was that strange game against Middle Tennessee. They were up 5 in sacks, up 2 in turnovers. And they blow out Middle Tennessee at Middle Tennessee as a 19.5-point dog. Other than that, they've been beaten in the trenches in every single game. And where a team like New Mexico likes to run the ball down your throat, as the game goes on, I think it's going to be a bigger advantage for New Mexico. So the matchup's good. My number shows New Mexico slightly, so that's probably be one of the teams I'll be on.
Well, of course, another thing, we talk about motivation. Again, our listeners have turned motivation into a drinking game here because it's a buzzword for us at this time of the year. But on the UTSA side, you know, they had Larry Coker, looked like he was going to be the coach at the start of the year, abruptly decides that he's going to step down. So they kind of scramble a little bit for Frank Wilson. And I mean, he's done a phenomenal job here with this team to even get them to a bowl game, especially without a whole lot of prep time. So you've got a first-year head coach, really a rookie head coach overall. He's not really gone through this bowl preparation period before. Oh, and by the way, here you go. You get a gimmick offense to face that you have to prepare for. So, Cheetah, in that respect, you know, we talk about motivation, as I said. Handicapping coaches is really, really big here in the bowl season. How did you incorporate that into your line?
I actually didn't really make an adjustment. If anything, though, I think where you're headed, it would be an advantage, I think, though, generally for New Mexico. He has done a fantastic job. I don't recall the season win total for them, but it was like 2.5 or 3. I mean, they've surpassed their expectations, by double essentially. So you have to give them credit. But yeah, if it's his first time prepping a team for a bowl game, you know, a team that wasn't even maybe expecting to be one in the first place, I think it is a little bit, of a learning curve for that coach and, you know, the whole staff in general, as well as the players. So I definitely think that does give an extra little edge or or whatnot to the New Mexico side. Did he come from LSU? Is that where he was at before? I mean, so he's obviously been there and learned at a program that's been, you know, successful in general. So I don't really give or take too much from it, but I think it is a point worth making. I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, and of course, too, being at LSU, you don't face a triple option.
Yeah, so no, that's fair.
He doesn't have a whole lot of experience with it at all, and I imagine, you know, his assistant coaching staff doesn't really either. I'll move down the slate here a little bit on Saturday. Las Vegas Bowl, either one of you guys going to this one?
I'm not. I think it's the 17th, right? It's Saturday. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm here, but I'm not headed there.
Brian, you going to the game?
No.
That was easy.
All right, then.
You know what? It's interesting because these are two teams I actually really like in general, just watching them play all year, last year as well. I haven't thought about going. Maybe I should go now. It hit me that it's this Saturday. Maybe I will.
I hate to say this in front of Cheetah, but I've been to two bowl games here in Vegas. Both of them involved BYU, and I always sat on the BYU side because there wasn't a line for beer. And
that's true.
That was my best takeaway out of the bowl games here in Las Vegas.
Well, there you go.
No line.
No line for beer.
That's brilliant, actually. Yeah. If BYU's in the Las Vegas Bowl, I'm going to make a trip out here just for that. So you've got Houston and San Diego State here, and obviously this is a very, I guess it's not that unique of a game because we see coaching changes all the time here prior to the bowl season. But what's unique about this one for Houston, and this is something I want to get thoughts from both of you guys on. So Houston had some lofty names that were out there in the market that could replace Tom Herman. You know, Lane Kiffin was kind of the big one. Of course, he goes to Florida Atlantic now. But you've got Major Applewhite, the offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach. But he's not the head coach for the bowl game. Defensive coordinator Todd Orlando is the interim head coach. So interesting dynamics there. Maybe Applewhite keeps Orlando around. But what do you feel like it does for the players to know that their next head coach, their offensive coordinator, is standing right there on the sidelines as opposed to having an interim guy who may not be there next year?
I think it's a benefit to have a guy there that's already been in the system and he knows how to get the best out of his players. He'll probably just keep the same system they've used all season long. I don't think he's going to change anything. That's one of the reasons why he's got the job. So you would expect Houston to have the same offense next year. As for who the head coach, I think it's at this point in the season when the head coach leaves, I think everybody just gets together. One guy may have been appointed the interim, but everybody just gets together and just continues to do what they've done all season.
Well, and you know what? It's actually interesting because we've seen a little bit of a line movement here. This game was sitting San Diego State +3.5 or +3. Now they're 3.5 or 4. So I wonder if that continuity is something that Sharp players are looking at here and are backing the Cougars. What do you think, Cheetah?
Yeah, that could be because it did move up recently, and so that might have been a reason for the tick up. I think I do agree in general, though. When just from a player's perspective, if your future head coach is right there, I mean, you're going to be giving it all just like you would have otherwise. So that's definitely a benefit. I think it takes away some of that factor that I had kind of talked about the week prior, I think, with Brian. I had just said, you know, if I'm going to make a play in this game, it's going to be San Diego State moneyline because I think you're either going to a Houston team that just completely no-shows or, they are the better team and you might be getting a short number if they do show up. You know, I don't think the 1, 2, or 3 is going to come into play very often. So my angle before, I think, was San Diego State moneyline if I had to make a play on the game, which I won't be making one. But now this does change things a little bit. I think you will see less of that letdown or just don't care mentality from the players because Applewhite's right there on the sidelines. So I'm going to be staying away now completely. I had considered just playing San Diego State on the money line, but I think you're going to get a competitive game now on both sides and both really good teams.
I actually did play the San Diego State, but I didn't get the 4. I got a 3.5 because I didn't expect him to be back as the coach. But Houston's had some problems along the lines, and it didn't show in the Louisville game. Up 10 sacks against Louisville in that game, the net sacks. But every other game they played, against SMU, down 7. Against Memphis just recently, they were down 2. So they're having problems along the lines. And you've got a team in Houston that, at least early on in the season, they were not expecting to be playing in Las Vegas. I mean, nothing against Las Vegas. We all live here. Some of us live here. But they had higher expectations than this. And San Diego State, did they have higher expectations? I don't know. So I think San Diego State's the team I would prefer to come out, and I know pretty much what I'm going to get out of them. I don't know if we're going to get everything out of Houston.
Well, and for San Diego State, too, it seems like they wind up in the Poinsettia Bowl quite often, which is, of course, in San Diego, so they don't even get to leave home. So maybe coming to Vegas, of course, which they do every other year to play UNLV anyway. Maybe it's still something they get a little bit excited about. But I guess one of the things about, you know, the bowl preparation period here is, you know, you have all these practices and all this time, but there's also a lot of sponsored events that go on before the game. So, you know, at least here coming to Vegas, the players are going to, you know, I don't know if they have showgirls that parade around or whatever the case may be, but, you know, they get to do a little bit of that, get to have a little bit of fun with something a little bit out of the ordinary. How about this Camellia Bowl here? And, of course, you know, this is right in Brian's wheelhouse with a MAC team on the slate. Appalachian State and Toledo. And of the early bowl games, I would say this one's probably top two or three for me because I think this is a really intriguing matchup for a lot of different reasons. And since Brian's the MAC expert here, we'll go ahead and go to Cheetah first.
I'm not going to make a play on the game because I lined at pick, and I don't think there's really any extra situational advantage one way or the other when you look into it. Both really, really solid teams. I don't have it in front of me. I think Toledo won 9 games, Appalachian State 8. I could be right, could be wrong, but it's somewhere in that range. They're both fantastic squads, and had, you know, Appalachian State was in that game against Tennessee early and, you know, made waves. And I think Toledo was in a game at BYU where they put up 50 something. It was just a boat race. And, you know, eventually I think BYU won late in that one, but they've played much better competition and hung in there. So I think you have to credit both squads in general in the seasons they've had. Unless this number got to like 3 one way or the other, I'm not going to be making a play. You know, really, if I had to, you know, I'd flip a coin, I would just see whatever the coin landed heads. Okay, Appalachian State, I really don't know who's going to win this game.
Well, Brian, you and I talked about this when we had that Western Michigan versus Toledo game, and you and I were both on the same page that Western was the best team in the MAC and Toledo was the second best team. And it was a shame that they both couldn't go to Detroit because they're in the same division. But with Toledo losing that game, and of course they actually played better than the final score would indicate in that game, do you feel like there's any hangover for them, or has enough time passed to where, you know, they're not worried about not being able to represent the MAC West in Detroit? They're solely focused on playing an Appalachian State team that actually played against Tennessee and Miami this year. So, you know, in terms of Sun Belt teams, this is probably the premier one that you'd want to play.
Yeah, especially when you go back a few years when they beat Michigan. I think that a lot of the kids will remember that. They don't know much about them. But, yeah, I made the line on this game, pick them. So I'm the same way. I don't have anything I'm really looking at here. I kind of wish these teams were playing other teams. So, yeah, you know, I'd prefer to bet on these teams. But the line's about where it is. I don't think Toledo's disappointed at all here. App State, are they a little disappointed? I doubt it. I really don't think any teams from the MAC, the Sun Belt, are ever disappointed going to a bowl game, unless it's like if Western Michigan had lost the championship and they don't get to play on New Year's Day. That's one of the rare occurrences. But especially when you're up north, and you're in Ohio this time of year, you know as well as anybody, you just want to get out of Ohio.
Yeah, that's actually the reason that I'm here. Not to hang out with you guys. I just want to get out of Ohio for a few days.
Yeah, me too. Two dinners.
You jumped ship from Ohio a long time ago. Don't even go with that.
Yeah, he was trying to pretend like he was an Indians fan this year and a Cavs fan before that. He never was before. He never talked about it until this year all of a sudden. I came into town and he pretends like he's a fan.
You'd never hear me talk about the Browns. And in reality, I've never been a Browns fan. I still want them to win for the city of Cleveland, but maybe they'll get a win next year.
You were a Browns fan on Sunday when they lost and didn't cover.
I had great numbers on that, too.
One other thing I want to ask you about with this Appalachian State-Toledo game here. How much does it frustrate you guys when you get teams that you want to play on in the bowl season, and then, of course, they wind up being paired up with each other? I mean, is it just the nature of the beast, or is it something that, you know, maybe you do look a little bit harder at that game to try and decide, maybe I do like Toledo a little bit more. Maybe I like Appalachian State a little bit more. Or do you just sort of move on from it, Brian?
To me, I don't worry about it. You've got so many games, so many opportunities. You don't have to bet them all. So it's just, you know, if they were playing somebody else, and like I said, I'd like to play on them. But if the line wasn't what I wanted, I wouldn't be playing on them anyway. So yeah, it's something that you can't really commit to unless you knew what the line was. So I only worry about things they put on the football schedule.
Yeah, you can't sweat it. I mean, that's what I kind of started with, saying there were two really good teams, had great seasons, and they're facing each other. It is what it is. You just have to pass.
Well, I think that that's a good lesson for our listeners out there because, I mean, everyone wants to play bowl games. They're all on a major network. You don't have to dig around on ESPN3 or, you know, have, I don't know, one of the Fox Sports affiliates or something like that to catch one of these games. People want to have action on every single one of these bowl games just because they're out there, they're watching them. And, you know, I guess, Cheetah, I'll ask you this question first, is how long did it take you to develop that discipline to know that sometimes the best bet on a game is not to make one.
You know, I was actually playing cards like an hour ago before I came here. I was meeting up to get the ticket for the Lamar Jackson thing, and I had about 45 minutes to kill. So I just stayed at Venetian. I was playing cards, and someone asked what I did. And I told him that I bet on sports here in Vegas. I just moved here last year and kind of told him a little bit about that. And he's like, all right, so who do you have tonight? And I was like, oh, actually, I didn't bet the game. And he was like, wait, what? You didn't bet the game? I was like, no, I didn't think there was a good bet in the game. I mean, if you got 7.5 early, I think that's a good bet, but no one that's in town visiting that's a tourist has Ravens plus 7.5. And you know, he's like, oh, okay, well then what did you have last night? Like, I didn't bet the Giants or the Cowboys side either. And he just was really surprised by that. But it kind of goes to what you're saying. You know, there's a lot of discipline in that, but I'd learned it a long time. I used to play cards a lot, online especially, and you know, the whole online grind, and that's the whole bankroll management from that thing made sports betting and being profitable easier. Not necessarily easy, but easier, because so many people lose more than they should, and in bad cases where they're chasing or they can't, you know, handle a downswing or even on upswings, they start betting more, and then the downswing hits and then they gave up everything they would have won otherwise. So it's definitely made it easier. I think it's just kind of my roots from cards.
Brian, what about you?
I've always been very conservative. Years past, maybe in college basketball, I've stepped out with 11 games. I go 3-8. Too many games. It's like going to the buffet. Of course, if you look at me, I've been to many buffets. And you want to get as much as you can for the price. So people who are out there, they want to get as much. The guy who was selling 11 plays on a Saturday in college basketball is going to make a whole lot more sales than the guy who's selling one play. But to me, I don't care about the sale as much as I do about my record. And cheaters the same way. So if you got
I'm the guy that usually has 11 on a Saturday.
You do. Well, you do. But, you know, if you know a guy who's giving you the play every Monday night.
Right. If you're selling a special game of the week every Monday night.
Yeah. There's 16 games in a college or an NFL schedule, whatever, 15, 16 games. You're going to have probably three. So why would he give out 16 Monday night football games over the course of the season? You're looking at basically the same thing. You should probably have three or four.
Yep.
Well, we'll keep moving on down the Saturday slate here for the bowl games. And this one's really interesting, too. You got Central Florida taking on Arkansas State. And throughout the season, Central Florida has been a bye team for a lot of sharp players. They went 0-12 last year. Obviously, they're going to do better than that this year. There's a lot of talent in the state of Florida. Team that's severely underachieved. And, you know, it seemed like things under O'Leary kind of got really stale really quickly. So they needed a change. Got it with Scott Frost. Obviously, it's worked out really well for them. The other side, you have an Arkansas State team that, you know, we've talked about this with various handicappers on the shows throughout the year. When an FBS school loses to an FCS school, especially if they do it at home, everybody sells their stock in that team immediately. And what almost always happens, they rattle off 4 or 5 straight wins against the number because, you know, people haven't really caught up. They've sold that team. They're an afterthought. They don't even think about them anymore. So you have two teams here that have gotten action fairly regularly. So in terms of this matchup, Brian, how do you break it down?
Yeah, Arkansas State started the year. They get blown out by Toledo, blown out by Auburn, lose at Utah State, and then they got the Central Arkansas game. Then they had their break, and then they started league play. Well, it's a totally different ball game when you start league play. Problem was, when they played that game against Georgia Southern, they had to come back from a -5 turnover margin to win that game, 27-26. That right there should tell you that's a team, now they got back into conference, that was a team you want to bet on. And I always track how teams do when they lose a turnover battle, and that's one of the things that tells me the heart of a program. And Arkansas State, since that time, has played very well. You go over the last four games in the sack totals, +6 against New Mexico State, +1 Troy, +4 Lafayette, +8 against Texas State. This is a team that's dominating the line of scrimmage right now, and they're going against that Central Florida team who's been a little bit up and down on the season. And one thing I haven't heard, you know, a lot of people about halfway through the season were talking about Scott Frost possibly maybe going to Nebraska or getting a bigger job. I'm assuming now that most of the main jobs are gone that he's going to stay here for next year, but I haven't heard anything yet.
Gene, I think one of the big things about this game, and I mean, we see this during bowl season, not all that regularly. They try to, you know, pair these teams up with conferences that are fairly equal in strength, but these two are not. The American Athletic Conference and the Sun Belt, there's a big gap here. So do you feel like that's why the number is up in the six range, or is that, you know, a true number based on the talent level of both of these teams?
Yeah, I would be surprised to see, you know, regularly odds makers shading lines in general, like because of a conference versus another conference. I think you might have seasons where one conference in general is undervalued or overvalued. I think I talked about it on the show last week, the Pac-12 in general, I thought was kind of being disrespected. I think you'll see cases of that, but I don't think you'll have a case where someone's like, oh, the AAC is better than Conference X, and so, you know, we're just going to give them an extra 2 or 3 points just because. But, you know, the real line says it should be, I guess my number's 5. I don't think there's really too much of that going on. I'm not someone that really would care anyway. You know, I trust my number more than anyone else's, and I just kind of got to go with that.
Same way, Brian?
My number's 5 also. I feel the same way. There was 3 teams. You put them all in a blender in the Sun Belt, and they were all very good. Appalachian State, Arkansas State, and Troy. So any of those teams matches up pretty well against USF here. Like I said, I made it 5, and that's because they're basically playing at home.
It's UCF, just double-checking for Brian. Not USF. The difference in Arkansas State's season was, I think it was Chad Voydick was a quarterback that transferred from Pitt. As soon as he went out, I believe it was in that Utah State game, their offense completely turned around. They had a couple of games where they were really negative in turnover differential, but the new quarterback was able to figure the offense out. And since they've had him, obviously getting to conference play was a big deal, but just not having Voydick at quarterback was massive. And so he hasn't really played. I think he took a snap. I just double-checked. He took a couple snaps and some blowouts earlier, like a month ago, against Mexico State and Louisiana Monroe. But, you know, with him gone, they've been a completely different team. And so they're not one that I would necessarily be afraid to back here getting, you know, 6, or if this reached 7, then I think I'd consider their side.
Brian, here's another question about this game. You know, when you talk about the NCAA tournament for college basketball, you want a veteran backcourt. You want guys that aren't going to be, you know, overwhelmed by the moment. Guys are going to take care of the basketball. Well, in this case here for Central Florida, and this isn't a big surprise, when you go 0-12, you know, nobody's job is really safe. But Mackenzie Milton, the starting quarterback here for the Knights, a true freshman actually out of Hawaii, and 9-7 turnover or touchdown to interception ratio on the season. You've got a freshman here making his first bowl game start. Is that something that worries you? Do you worry about a guy like that taking care of the football in what's probably the biggest spot of the year, because it is, you know, a game with a little bit of notoriety?
Not necessarily. I don't think it's the biggest spot of the year, because this is bowl games are basically something for the team to enjoy after the season. It's a reward for their season. When they're playing in conference action and they're playing a big rival, I think that's a bigger deal. And plus, this far into the season, is he really a freshman? So I don't think that's going to matter.
Cheeto, you the same way?
Technically, he is a freshman, but he has experience that, you know, it's not like week one, and I think that's what Brian's getting at. So I'm similar in that way.
All right, one more game to talk about here on this upcoming Saturday slate, the New Orleans Bowl between Southern Mississippi and Louisiana Lafayette. This will be an interesting game because Hattiesburg actually a little bit closer than Lafayette. Destination Bowl in New Orleans. Lafayette's been to this bowl several times here under Mark Hudspeth, so, you know, maybe their fans aren't going to be as energized for this one. But at the same time, you have a Southern Miss team that expected to do something more this year. They had an experienced quarterback in Nick Mullins. You know, they did have the coaching change from last year, so it was kind of a wonder how that was going to go. But do you feel like, and I'll ask this question to you first, Cheetah, do you feel like Southern Miss is one of those teams that could be lacking motivation here?
I don't, actually. I think, you know, if I recall, Nick Mullins is a guy that actually might have some NFL potential. This is kind of his last hurrah or last shot at wowing scouts or whatever it may be. He's a senior. He had a disappointing season in general, but, you know, he was banged up recently, especially. I think he got hurt in the Charlotte game. They ended up losing. Then he missed games against, should have pulled it up. It was like Old Dominion and North Texas, I think, were like their last two games, right, of the year. And then he got to play against La Tech, and, you know, it's a good La Tech team, and they beat him, I think, 39-20 or something like that. So he's impressive when he's played well and been healthy. They're a really good football team still. So I'm not surprised to see the number around where it is. My number was 4. I downgraded a little because I think there's a little bit of a home field edge for Louisiana, Lafayette, and I, you know, I valued it somewhat. But, you know, I think it's a good number at this point. Not enough for me to play Lafayette's side. And honestly, I don't think there's a lack of motivation in this Southern Miss team. I just think they lost games when they're senior quarterback who has NFL potential, wasn't able to play. And when he did play, they were similar to where they were supposed to be and where they were last year. So I kind of like him. Just if I had to make a side or take a side, not throw the numbers out, pick who wins the game, I would take Southern Miss. I don't think you'll see him flat.
Brian, how do you break this game down?
Yeah, I look at it the other way. I understand the quarterback coming back is a big deal, but Louisiana Tech, I don't believe they were focused on that game. They had other things to worry about, so I don't read too much into that. They only gained them yards per play, 5.5 to 4.6, took advantage of a +2 turnover margin, win that game by 15. Now, it was a surprise. I'm looking at the score coming in. I didn't expect that to happen, but you see that all the time for some of these teams. I talked about playing with heart, and Southern Miss has lost a turnover battle 7 times this year. They lost against the spread all 7 games. That, to me, tells me if they start falling behind, things go badly, they don't have the ability to come back and win those games. Then I look at Louisiana Lafayette. They've lost a turnover battle 4 times all year. Perfect 4-0 against the spread. Best in college football. Next best team is Alabama at 4-1. So you got a Louisiana Tech team that doesn't give up. Tech plays in this bowl all the time. This is a home game for them. They knew where they were going. They come here. I think it's clearly that they're the better team. And I know that, my number's less. My number was only 1.5 here for Southern Miss. It's not like it's a great deal here for Lafayette. But if I want to put my money on a team, I want to play a team that wants to be here and has shown all season long that if things go badly against them, they don't give up. And that's the kind of team they have here.
Well, it's a little bit unfortunate here that you guys don't have some stronger opinions on these Saturday games. Seems like a lot of these numbers pretty close to what you have. And in a general sense, looking at the overall bowl landscape here, Brian, has it been like that for you throughout where a lot of these numbers are very close to where you had them?
They're extremely close. What I do originally is I make my power ratings, and then you go from that point on. And I think when a lines maker puts out the line, basically they're using their power ratings. So I wouldn't expect anything to be much different. But as the weeks go on and the stories go on as to this is a good story, ESPN's talking about this guy, whatever, coaches leaving, that kind of thing, the lines move. And a lot of the things that they're talking about make no difference to me in my numbers. So while my number may be exactly on a game right now, it doesn't mean by the time that game goes off that I won't have a play on it.
Chito, what about you? A lot of these have been pretty close to your numbers as well.
Yeah, I think the best bet on Saturday, if I had to actually make one, which I didn't even do when the number was higher when it opened, but Houston, San Diego State under. It's still a 55, 54.5. San Diego State's going to try to run the ball. That's what they do. I know Pumphrey's going to go for the rushing record. I'm not sure what he's short about 100 yards. He'll get as many carries as he needs. Silently, Houston has the third best rush defense in the entire country behind Alabama, Ohio, and they're actually tied with Louisville, and Michigan's right behind them. Very strong against the run. So that alone, and neither team's playing super up-tempo. So that alone, I thought the number came in pretty high, and I still think 54.5 has a little value. And then when you break down the matchup, I think it just favors an under game. I do like when I play unders if teams have like 2 or 3 weeks off. This is not as much. Just because you'll see a little more rust maybe offensively and the rhythms of the quarterbacks and whatnot, and then defenses get more time to prep. But I think it'll ultimately matter. And if you do have some hiccup, as far as, offense goes for Houston now that Herman's gone, I don't expect you'll see a ton. But I definitely don't think it'll be positive that he's gone. So it just is another bonus or another factor there. So if I had to make a play Saturday, which I do not have a single bet for Saturday, it would be under, though, in that game.
How can you be a professional bettor and not have action on 5 of those bowl games?
That's why he has more money to play after Saturday.
That's right.
One more bowl game I want to ask about because we won't have you guys on the show again until next Tuesday. That's the Miami Beach Bowl between Central Michigan and Tulsa. And there are a couple of really intriguing things about this game. And the one that really stands out to me is that these two teams go at dramatically different paces. Tulsa, one of the fastest teams in the country. Central Michigan, not at all in that category. I believe they're in the bottom 50. So when you talk about a game like that here, Central Michigan has played some teams that like to push the tempo a little bit, but not to this extent. Is that a really hard thing for a team to prepare for, Brian? Because you can't really practice that if it's something that you're not accustomed to doing.
Yeah, it could be, especially in the MAC. They don't have those teams that go out and do that in the MAC. They did play the Oklahoma State earlier in the season, and depending on who you talk to, they either won or lost that game. But, I made this line basically where it's at, so I haven't given this much of a look. It's one of those games that I don't have much on until the line moves, so we'll have to see.
I line at 13.5. This is probably, of the games we've talked about, my favorite side, because I am a believer in the scheming and the actual X's and O's of a matchup. And when a team like CMU never sees, you know, an offense like Tulsa's, or even just any up-tempo offense, let alone one that's been so productive and so efficient. You know, the coach is in Montgomery, I believe. Came from Baylor. He was the offensive coordinator there. So for people that don't know, it's basically the Baylor offense is now Tulsa. And it's been fantastic for him. And I think out of the gate, it's as much as you can try to prep or get the scout team guys to really imitate it, it's not the same thing. They're going to come out. I think Tulsa, just from the get-go, kind of shocked CMU. You're going to see like a 21-0 game in the middle of the second quarter or something like that. So I'm going to play the first quarter, first half. It should be under a touchdown, 6 and 6.5 range, assuming it stays around 11 or 11.5. And that's probably going to be a bet for me. Of the games we talked about, that's my favorite play.
They did actually play Virginia early in the season, a high-scoring game, and they gave up 8.2 yards per play against Virginia. Bronco Mendenhall wanted the team to run a little bit faster pace. They never really
but
at the time they were trying to do that, and they really struggled against that.
They gave up 49 to Virginia. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, let's move over to the NFL side here, because you know, there's a lot going on in the NFL, especially this time of year. You've got the playoff chases. You have what should be a pretty tight NFL market because all these college football bowl games are up already. You have college basketball, but the bigger betting handle is still going to be on the NFL. I guess the place to start here is Thursday. Brian and I always talk about the Thursday night game, and might as well do it here again this week because there's a lot going on with this game. You have a Seattle team coming off of an embarrassing loss on the road at Green Bay. They were -6 in turnover margin, I believe, in that one. And then you've got a Los Angeles team that just fired Jeff Fisher. So, you know, I guess 7-9 actually isn't good enough in the NFL. But how do you handicap a game like this on a short week where you've got a really massive underdog that just fired its coach? I mean, could this be as much of a blowout as it's expected to be, Brian?
It very well could be, because you always like to take the home team on these games. Now, obviously, it's a divisional game, so they know each other a little bit better. But usually, the better coaches perform very well on these Thursday games. Well, you know, Fisher was a good coach. You go back and take a look at his quarterbacks he's had in his career. He's never had any good quarterbacks. I still think he's a good coach, but things might have passed him up, and he deserved to get fired. But you've got a team going in without their head coach here in a short week.
And a rookie quarterback.
And a rookie quarterback and some players on that team that obviously contributed to him being fired. You know, some quotes out there from Gurley that the offense wasn't a pro offense, a high school offense. So you've got that situation, and then you have Seattle here laying a big number off of that loss to Green Bay. But do I really want to back Seattle here? Because as the season's going on, you know, Seattle hasn't done nearly as well in the trenches. The last 3 weeks, they lost the sack battle by 2 to Green Bay, by 3 to Carolina, by 6 to Tampa Bay. They're not getting it done across the lines, and so it may be a lower-scoring game, and the Rams may be able to cover because it is a lower-scoring game. I don't expect much out of the offense for the Rams, but maybe Rams points. I don't know. I haven't given it that much of a thought at this point, but it's one of those handicaps that's going to be, at least to me, is a little bit harder than what it normally would be.
It stinks because I was going to play the Rams. They look so bad. So did the Seahawks, though. So I think you're getting a bounce-back Seahawks home line that was inflated. And you look back, I mean, the Rams played Seattle earlier this year. They won 9-3. And for whatever reason, they always play Seattle well. The year before, they played twice and beat them both times. The year before that, when Seattle crushed Denver in the Super Bowl, they won their home game and they lost by, I think, like 6 on the road at Seattle. They just always play Seattle tight. They've been lower scoring games in the last, I think, 2 have been under the total. So I was looking at maybe potentially playing under 40.5 when it opened last night, and then taking 14. I passed. So I was like, you know, just kind of wait. I wasn't in a rush. Then the Fisher news happened, and I actually don't know what to do. I'm probably just going to – one of those things again. I feel like it's such a – it's more. There's so much more variance now trying to gamble on this game. So, like, what's the point of doing it? You know, if you do feel like you have an edge, I don't know if I – I'm sure I have an edge now anymore, so I'm not going to bother doing it. But I did, if people want action or whatever that are out there, I did like the Rams before, so getting the hook now at 14.5, I mean, I think it does make sense. I'm just not sure what you're going to see.
Well, and where do you think this number goes? I mean, obviously the public will come in on Seattle with the whole situation with Fisher. And I mean, the Seahawks, even though they struggled last week, you know, I mean, they're still a team that's probably going to wind up being the two seed in the NFC. They're a very public team. They've been in the national landscape for a long time. So do you have a buy point on this game then? Or would you still?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some number where I have to bet it, right? I mean, if it got to 17, which I never would, I mean, I'd have to probably take the Rams. The buy point's supposed to be now. I just haven't really thought it through enough. You know, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if I ended up taking some Rams. It might be a smaller play, but 14.5, I feel like that won't last ultimately. I expect it to come back down to 13.5 or 14. You kind of get the initial overreaction, coach leaves, gets fired, and it'll settle back to where it was before. And that's kind of where I think it would head.
Well, I guess the follow-up question would be, you know, with you being in the industry that you're in and the scrutiny that you're under, you say that you may take a small piece of the Rams, but in terms of a confidence level for selling this as a premium play, that's an altogether different animal, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, and the way my volume's so high, I rarely actually sell plays as like one play. You know, I think I've done it 4 times like all year. So generally I just try to, you know, if I have like 15 plays over the course of a Thursday through Monday, you know, I just recommend people get my weekend package, and I won't bother trying to sell it, you know, a 3-star, 5%, whatever, just because in my opinion, there's just anything can happen in one pick. People that try to just go and pick and choose and tell someone on one pick, it's not going to work out. I think you're a lot better off, you know, taking someone's weak card, weak meaning W-E-E-K for the week, in you know, betting all 15 versus just betting the one that I think's maybe got a slighter or a bigger edge than another game. So, yeah, for me, if I bet it smaller, it's probably not going to be one that I release at all. It would just kind of be a numbers play for me. My volume, for people to laugh, but my volume is probably even higher than the ones my clients get. So I'm trying to take advantage of half points here and there and wherever it might be and just scooping up any extra edge I can.
Everybody I know that gambles for a living, it's a lot higher than anybody else because you were both betting into the opening lines and those lines are there for 10 minutes. You're betting the games of the years. Those lines are there for 10 minutes. It's a totally different ball game, and most people who buy picks are buying it day of the game, and that's another problem you have. When you put up a play that you think is going to move, you can get out there and try to say, hey, this game is going to move, but a lot of people will not bet until they see what they do the prior day to see how much money they have to bet, and that's just the problem we have in our industry is if we were dealing to other guys who, let's say I'm a kid as a college basketball handicapper, I'm an NBA handicapper, we trade plays off, we bet each other's plays, and that's fine. But it's tough to do that for the general public because they're going to buy it late. They're not going to play the overnight lines. It's just part of the industry, and you know the guys who bet for a living have to do that. That's how we make our money. It's tough beating the 11 to 10 on game day NFL Sundays.
Yeah, every edge counts, and that's a good piece of advice just for anyone that wants or looks to buy picks. You know, don't buy a single pick from someone. That would be my one recommendation. But plenty of people like to do that, and that's fine. It's your choice. But if you can get a full week of plays, you know, you get the early picks on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, the ones that Brian may release that he's saying, you know, come game day, he has to take it down because it moved. You know, every half point, it's like people don't understand, you know, 2-3%, 4% edge, like on a half point or something, you know, especially around a key number, even higher, that's massive. I mean, you're trying to hit 53%. And if you're giving up and buying the day of the game and it's moved and you're betting a bad number, you know, you're giving up any edge you had and you're just hoping that you flip a coin well that day. It's just, it's very tough. Every little ounce of value adds up. And so, it's a great question though, in general, cause you're asking people that sell plays versus when they bet and this and that and how it works. And you know, you try to do your best, but I've always just told people, clients and future clients, hey, just try to get all my plays for a week early on. More often than not, we're going to be ahead of the number and that should pay off in the end.
Well, and another hard thing about it, and I've talked with both of you guys about this, and in fact, I talked with Brian about it on the way here, is, you know, you guys can't sell the derivative stuff. You can't sell first and second half stuff. You can't sell the live betting, the in-play, where those are generally the least efficient of the numbers. Those are where you can find the value. So, I mean, it's getting tougher to bet full games, both sides and totals, but you're getting these opportunities in play, and some listeners may not have access to that kind of thing. Some listeners may not follow along to that kind of thing, but you know, that's all part of your success rate personally that doesn't go out there publicly.
Well, exactly the time to play it to me is in the bowls, because we're always worrying about who's motivated to play, who's not motivated to play, and you're tying your money up before the game. Just wait until the game's being played, and then you could definitely tell. I've been to, like I said, I've been to a couple of bowl games, and I can look down on the sideline, and one side is all excited, and the other side is not. And that's right before the game. Now, once they get on the field, it may be something different. But if you're watching the game and you could see one team is just dominating the other and the other team doesn't seem to care, the linesmaker's got his charts, and he's going to use, for the most part, his chart on a 10-point favorite that's down 7-0. And if you're watching those kind of games and in-game, you could take advantage of that. And to me, the bowl games are definitely the best time of the season to do that.
In general, first half, second half stuff, almost every book offers it now. So that's a positive. Back 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. First half especially is going to be just about everywhere. And, I think most – I don't know of any books other than Pinnacle, I know, doesn't offer many college basketball second halves. And then when they do, limits vary from like 500 to 2,000, which is actually pretty low for them. So other than that, though, I think you're generally going to get second half opportunities in most books and even credit shops, local, bookies, whatever it may be. So I think that's one bit of progress we've seen on some of those types of bets is, 2016, 2017, most places are offering the halves. Quarters not as often, and actual props and stuff, first innings in baseball, those types of things where you can add, even more to your bankroll long-term. Yeah, it's impossible to sell that type of stuff. I'm never going to sell a DeMar DeRozan under 23.5 points. I mean, get $100 on it or something. But if you feel like you have an edge and you're betting it yourself, great. It just, it adds up. But, you're not going to be able to sell that type of stuff probably for a long time.
Another NFL game I want to talk about here, this one coming up on Sunday during Week 15. The Detroit Lions and the New York Giants. We were talking about this game a little bit here before we started recording. I wanted to make sure that I hit this one because everybody saw that Cowboys-Giants game last night. And both of those teams, the Giants especially, put a ton of emphasis into that game. I mean, that was, you really don't see NFL teams step up to the plate like that this late in the regular season unless there's a lot on the line for them. So the natural inclination, of course, would be to look for a letdown here this week against the Detroit Lions, who, by the way, are a pretty good team in their own right, currently would have the number 2 seed, depending on what happens with Seattle on Thursday night when they blow out the Rams. But in this game here, we've actually seen this number come up a little bit from 4 to 4.5 or 5. Gee, is that a move that surprises you, given, it theoretically should be a letdown spot for the Giants, no?
It would normally, but Matthew Stafford has an injured hand. And that news came out today, and you saw the 4... I think it was just 4s everywhere almost at that point, came back up. And I actually, this is one of 2 games I hit last night on openers that I just thought were bad numbers. I took +4.5, especially the spot compounded. And then the Giants ended up beating the Cowboys, afterwards, which even helped me more. I was loving it. And then there's news that Stafford's hand is injured. He might not even be able to play or practice this week. Then there was news that it was actually a rumor and that he is going to be fine in practice all week. So who really knows? So I haven't actually, this is going into like, what do you do when you have a play, do you sell it, this or that? This is one I'm not going to release until we get, news on Matthew Stafford that's concrete. But generally, I think it's a great spot to back Detroit, and the numbers, the 1.5 high, I think it should be more like 3. For me, I think Detroit's definitely a play once you find out about Stafford. And assuming that he does play and he's good to go and healthy, you're probably going to see this drop down pretty quick. So you kind of have to be on your toes and be watching.
The Stafford information was the reason why the line moved, I believe. But we always talk about this. If somebody looks really good on national TV, teams are going to want to back them. But I watched that game, and I don't think the Giants looked that good. They had one big play offensively in that game.
Defense played well, though.
Defense played very well, and the defense has been playing better as the season goes on. But when I take a look at the schedule here for Detroit, and let's say Stafford's questionable. They play at the Giants this week, and then next week they play Monday Night Football at Dallas. Then the big showdown against Green Bay the last week of the season. So if there's any way he's not going to play, maybe they'll just set him this game. They don't want to get him hurt, come down to the end of the season. And the Giants finished the season against Philadelphia on Thursday night, which is a short week for them the following week, and then at Washington, divisional rival. So both teams have better games on deck, bigger games on deck than what they have right here. And usually those are the kind of games that I, for the most part, want to stay away from unless I've got all the facts.
One other game I want to look at here for Sunday, now that I was looking down the card, and you know, I mean, there are a few really intriguing matchups, but you know, I've heard countless times from professional handicappers, we bet numbers, not teams. You've got the Buffalo Bills, who are a 10.5-point favorite against the Cleveland Browns. And when you look at a situation like this, I think the first thought from a lot of people is, how can I bet the Bills to beat anybody by double digits? Because they're a decent team. They haven't really shown it at too many points here throughout the year. But from a numbers standpoint, I imagine that the Browns are kind of an attractive team. Double-digit dogs in the NFL, you know, tend to be something that people do like to back. You don't make a lot of money betting double-digit favorites in the NFL. But, Cheeto, when you see a game like this, I mean, do you have to resist the temptation? Or, you know, is it something where you just kind of hold your nose and hope for the best?
I mean, it's funny timing because, you know, Cleveland gets steamed every week, especially like the morning of.
Yeah, from Brian.
Brian goes and puts the mortgage on. And they never cover. And there was an article that came out that I think ESPN was doing on I don't remember the title exactly, but it was Wise Guys Bet Cleveland Every Week and Lose or something like that. And I was like, you know, I bet them once this year, I believe, and it was against Dallas getting 7.5 at home in a pretty good spot. Dallas was off a big win. Maybe it was like the Steelers game, I think. And so I like the Browns in that spot. The number made sense. I bet them. But I'm not a guy that's like, oh, the numbers, you know, like I'm fine betting a team too. Like you said, I bet numbers. I don't bet teams. You have to do both, in my opinion. So if the Browns are this bad, which they look like they are, no offense, Brian, I'm not going to be – it's not a team I'm backing. If anything, I'm just looking for spots to – you know, to play against them. So for me, I will not be taking plus 10. I also won't be laying 10 with Buffalo. There's news Rex Ryan's going to be out, and that kind of broke this morning too, that he's on the very, very, very short leash. So stay away from me on passing. But if you do like plus 10, plus 10.5, I think because Cleveland gets steamed so often, it's worth taking now. And then, you know, if you do like Buffalo, you can probably wait.
The thing with Cleveland and the numbers is in the history – well, I've been doing it 35 years. So in the history, these are the type of teams that cover. And as the season goes on, there was a stat out there a few years ago. If a team starts the season 0-4, they cover about 63% the rest of the season. Well, the Browns haven't exactly done that. And the reason I went against them last week was you got a team off of a bye. You get a winless team off of a bye. They're excellent against the spread. And you had Cincinnati, who'd already beaten Cleveland, playing Cleveland, and then they got their big rival against Pittsburgh the week later, and they'd played their best game of the season the week before. It didn't work out. I lost the game. But if you do it 100 times, I'm confident 60% of the time that's the right side to play it. But this Cleveland team is so bad, and I was talking to Adam about it. Until last week, the last four games, sacks-wise, -6, -8, -2, -4, last week they were actually +1 because they had a quarterback that wasn't a sitting duck in
around.
It. And you know, but Buffalo's having problems on their offensive and defensive lines too. Sack totals -5, -4, -3, -1 the last four games. So my first thought was to play Buffalo, but I don't need to play this game.
The one angle I do kind of like, when you have a guy like RG3 coming back his first game last week, that's tough to back that, I think, in its first spot. He's been rusty, hasn't been practicing as much, let alone playing in games. And now it's the next week after they look bad again that I think there might be some value, or you get a better, more fluid offense for Cleveland. So I do kind of like that angle if you were to bet Cleveland. Yeah, I think RG3 plays better this week.
So, Cheeto, we got a listener question here. It's on the college basketball side, and unfortunately we're going to be held to an hour here, you know, with our studio time.
Sure.
But I had a listener ask about betting money line parlays for college basketball. On some of the smaller favorites. I don't remember what exactly the example was. I know Duke was part of it. Maybe Duke and Arkansas, something like that, wound up being like -125 last week. Is that something that you look to do? Would you ever recommend that?
I've done it before. I think there's more value in it, actually, in college football or even the NFL. College basketball, it's tough to say, and I haven't actually like back-tested it, nothing historically here, but They play 30 games a year. It's similar like with the NBA, like a money line parlay in the NBA on any given night. Like, can you really count on motivation to be completely there for any two teams in a money line parlay or three teams, you know, in an 82 game season? I'm not sure. You know, football, especially college, they got 12 games to play, and that's that. And, you know, for many teams, they lose one and that's their season, or maybe a second game and that's their season. So I feel like you can just kind of count on those spots more often in football than basketball, but ultimately it's a numbers thing. if you're, I'm not sure exactly what the example is, but say you're getting Duke at minus six and Arkansas, if that was the other team, at minus five, and it pays about minus 120 or minus 125, and you think both teams should be favored by 2 points higher, you know, minus 25 is a great bet. Your implied minus eight and minus seven would be more like minus 160. So you're getting like 35 cents of value there. So ultimately it comes down to your numbers. So more often than not, I'd rather just lay five and lay six if I had that much extra value. But in a moneyline parlay sense, you know, or a teaser or whatever it could be, there are spots where it makes sense mathematically too. So it definitely can be valuable.
The downside to playing any parlay or moneyline parlay is you have to have the best line at the exact same time for both of those games at the same book. And if he's, let's say he's looking to play a plus 130 at Sportsbook A and it's plus 125 everywhere else, and he's looking to parlay that with something that's 125 plus 125 everywhere else and then only plus, you know, 115 where he's at, then he's doing himself a disservice. He's better off playing the money line at the best possible number, the highest possible number at each of those individual places.
Well, and this is something that we can expand on a little bit next week when we've got a little bit more time and with some more concrete examples from out there in the college basketball betting market. But for our listeners out there, again, make sure you head on over to DSI Sportsbook. You can use that promo code BTB Radio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial investment. Head on over to wagertalk.com. Check out all the great work that Cheetah and Brian do. They've got free pick videos. Of course, their packages are also available. Free pick write-ups over there as well. So all kinds of stuff going on over at wagertalk.com. Make sure that you join us on our Wednesday show. We'll have our Week 15 Gridiron Gambling Report segment with myself and Cole Ryan. Also our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. So a lot of good stuff coming your way with that. So thanks to Cheetah and Brian for this opportunity. Really outstanding. And talk to you again tomorrow.